or Encanto 4, Chapter 7, the sacrifice performed by Daksha. And, alright, I was told it was 37, but there's 38 on the board. So we'll just read 37 and then we'll do 38. Lokapala uchu drishta kim no drigbira sadgrahais tvam pratyagrashta drishyate yena vishvam maya hiyesha bhavadiya hi puman yastvam shasta panchabir bhashi bhutai. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The governors of various planets spoke as follows. Dear Lord, we believe only in our direct perception, but under the circumstances we do not know whether we have actually seen you with our material senses. By our material senses we can simply perceive the cosmic manifestation, but you are beyond the five elements. You are the six. We see you, therefore, as a creation of the material world. Purport. The governors of various planets are certainly materially opulent and very puffed up. Such persons are unable to understand the transcendental eternal form of the Lord. In the Brahma Samhita it is stated that only persons who have anointed their eyes with love of Godhead can see the personality of Godhead in every step of their activities. Also in the prayers of Kunti in the Bhagavatam 1.8.26, it is stated that only those who are akinchana gocharam, who are not materially puffed up, can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Others are bewildered and cannot even think of the Absolute Truth. All right, well, we might go on to that one next. Just a couple of words about this one. But before we go on, and before I forget, there are 10 more days left to submit Vyasa Puja offerings for Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja, which is on September the 3rd. So there are 10 days left. Everybody's requested, please give some offering. Of course, formerly that ginormous Vyasa Puja book was being put together by Padmalochan Prabhu and his wife. This year it will honor Padmalochan Prabhu's efforts if we get another such book out. Who is doing it this year, by the way? Sadhana. Alright, so there's a number of devotees. So everybody please submit your offerings. Today is also, I'm not sure whether it's auspicious or inauspicious, but Indian Independence Day. It's a full day fast with an Ekadasi breakfast. but anyway, independence. What for independence? That's the question. Who is actually independent? The other week I was with my eldest daughter, Sachi, in Vrindavan. Actually in Delhi and then Vrindavan. She's never been to India before. So I took her through the Delhi temple and we had a look at the exhibits, the Bhagavad Gita exhibit there. And the next day we were in Vrindavan, so we were talking a little bit. And she was kind of a bit challenging me on the idea that, you know, there's such a thing as destiny. She'd seen that in the Bhagavad Gita exhibit and it struck her that, you know, all of the soldiers on the battlefield are destined to be killed anyway, so you're not really killing anyone, so you should just fight for the sake of, you know, for my sake. That's Krishna telling Arjuna. So she had some problems with that because she's been brought up, you know, in the Western educational system where everybody's led to believe that they can actually be independent or that they are independent, you know, and the educational system is designed in such a way to get people to think independently. So we didn't have a long conversation about it, but I just explained to her that there's no such thing as actual independence. You can't just decide whatever you want. Even if you think you're deciding whatever you want, your decisions are based on the circumstances that you live. beginning with the body that you obtained in a particular family, in a particular community. And immediately you pop out of the womb, you're being conditioned by those circumstances. You can't, if you're born in England, as she was, you can't suddenly start thinking like an Indian. You can't suddenly start thinking like an African. You were conditioned to think in a certain way by the very body that you obtain. And what to speak about, you know, all the social customs that you learn in the particular community that you grow up in, the educational system which tells you or presents things to you as a truth, when in actual fact, in another country, the very same so-called truth is being denounced as a lie. This goes on all the time. There's so many political truths, like in Europe from the Second World War. If you're brought up in England, you have a particular view of the Second World War and who won it and why they won it. But if you're brought up in Germany, you have a completely different view of it. Or in France, you have another view of it, etc., etc. So in other words, who is actually independent? Nobody. Every single person on the planet has to think in a certain way, or is conditioned to think in a certain way, according to their, you know, that very moment of birth. And if you wanted to get into it in a finer way, you know, there's the system of astrology. You can look at a person's horoscope, and you can still even finer, see even finer conditioning, which is going to be imposed on a person throughout their lives. They come into a certain period, astrological period. That means there's the influence of even another planet. What to speak about the influence of their own family, you know, their particular society, their country, and then the international mores that have been pursued, political correctness, and this and that and the other. But you're even influenced by higher planetary systems, other planets that bring to you certain conditions of life and certain ways of thinking. And you can't overcome them. It's not possible. You can try and you can fool yourself that you're a little bit independent, but actually, who is independent? Nobody. Everybody is fully conditioned and fully dependent at every moment. And of course, spiritually, that's the first thing that we have to learn, that we're not independent. We are entirely dependent, not just on material nature. But if we want to look still finer again, we will see that material nature itself, this planet, you know, the universe, that also is working in a particular way. It's designed to do particular things. It works according to particular laws. Everybody talks, even the scientists talk about the laws of, you know, physics, the laws of nature. So if there's laws, then somebody's made them. Just a few weeks ago, we just got a message, some of you will have seen that, there's this Professor Anthony Flew, who was one of the big atheists. He, in the 1950s, he expounded some atheistic philosophy, which caught on and became, you know, kind of like the underlying philosophy behind the modern atheistic movement. So, you know, this man has expounded atheism his whole life. Now all of a sudden he's renounced it, and he's declared that actually, I believe that there must be some kind of higher intelligence which is behind the workings of the entire universe, because it's so complex, it's not possible for it to have just occurred by chance. So he's changed his view now. He's got a little older and a little wiser, and he started to realize that behind the complexity of material nature, there's something else going on there. You know, it's not just all happening willy-nilly. You know, it's working in very, very specific ways. Just like if you look at the Taoist idea, that idea is that every species and every living being comes from a common ancestor. That somewhere along the line, way back, there was one common living cell, which then began to multiply and divide and then, you know, reconstruct itself in so many different ways, so that now you have millions of different forms. So in other words, you know, a banana and a horse actually have the same ancestor. It sounds ludicrous, you know, when you look at it from that point of view, but this is what they actually say. You know, that a mosquito and a human being are actually brothers. You know, we're all from the same common ancestors, some kind of mysterious bacteria, you know, which suddenly appeared somehow or another, which nobody can explain. But there was somehow or another some mysterious appearance of life. And then on the basis of that mysterious appearance of life, then all these different forms have gradually evolved. Sounds a little bit familiar. Because if you look in the Bhagavatam, that's exactly what it says there also. That there is a mysterious appearance of life. Nobody can understand what it is. What's, you know, behind this development of matter. It's very, very mysterious. You can't exactly say how it came about or when it came about, but it was there, and on the basis of that life being there, being present, then you got all these different species suddenly appearing and starting to, well, they say evolving, but appearing nevertheless. So if you read the Bhagavatam, of course, you get that description of the creation according to Lord Brahma. And what is he doing? He's a living being. He's the first mysterious appearance of a living being within this dark universe. And then, from his body, all different kinds of species of life are coming. All the trees, all the plants, all the insects, you know, and then he expands as the Prajapatis. The Prajapatis are giving birth, you know, to the reptiles, to the birds, to the human beings, to the demigods. They're all coming from an original source. So they're not very far wrong. We agree with the scientists in some respects. The problem is that they won't give credit where credit is due. Rather than say that that original life is intelligent, cognizant, unlimitedly powerful, no, they want to say, oh, it's just chance. Somehow or another, that life just came about by chance, but they can't explain how or why. There's no explanation whatsoever about what life actually is. They can't identify it. It's very mysterious. But if we say that there's God, but you can't understand who he is, you can't understand how he's existing eternally and unlimitedly, you can't understand how he's working, they'll say, oh, just religious rubbish and sentiment. They're saying exactly the same thing in a different way, but they're just not willing to admit that that original life on which everything rests is a supreme person. So why? Because they're envious. It says here, the governors of various planets are certainly materially opulent and very puffed up. This is the reason. Ultimately, they're just puffed up. They want to represent themselves as being the ultimate life form. Yeah? Not God. Because if you accept that God is the ultimate life form, you have to accept you have no independence because he's cleverer than you. He's more powerful than you. He owns more things than you do. In fact, he owns everything and you don't own anything. So what are you left with? Nothing. Except your relationship with him. As soon as you accept that there is God, there is a supreme person, you have to accept that you're here to serve him. That you are subservient to him. And that all the developments, all the laws, all the conditioning, everything, you know, that bears down upon us as living beings and shapes what we are in this particular birth, that has all been arranged. It's not by chance. You only have two options. You either say it happened by chance or you say it happened deliberately. So at least now, some of the material scientists after looking into the workings of material nature and finding increasingly more and more complexity in the workings of nature, in the fabric of nature, in the stuff of the universe, they're starting to realize that this could not possibly have happened by chance. It's statistically impossible. I was just looking at a video last night, 100 Reasons Why Evolution is Stupid. There's some Christian preacher, he specializes in preaching against evolution, and another fellow who was explaining the statistical impossibility of evolution. So he gives the example. First of all, he explains, you know, all the different aspects of what is needed, the ingredients that are needed for a single cell to form, you know, in a perfect way, in such a way that it could actually be useful. So the different components in a simple cell, you know, DNA, RNA, the protons, neutrons, this and whatever. There's so many different things, amino acids, that have to be there and all combined together in an exact formation. So he calculated the statistical probability for each. There's about 6 components that he identifies. And even if you take something like an amino acid, it has this chain of nucleic acids that have to combine together. There's like 10,000 of them in a strand. I think it's 10,000. And they all have to be exactly the same, and in exactly the same order. And then they can actually form one part of a cell, a living cell. Not even a living cell, a cell. And then what to speak about the DNA, we've all seen now, you know, the drawings of the DNA strands. And, you know, this spiral shape. And then the combinations, thousands and thousands of combinations in the DNA. And that's only one part of a cell. So in this way, he's identified about 6 different parts, and he's calculated the statistical probability, yeah, for them to have appeared in the first place, and then what to speak about them all combining together to make a cell. So he came to the conclusion that the probability of that one cell forming, let's say that one original cell from which all the other cells came, all the little baby cells and grandbaby cells and great-grandbaby cells, right? He calculates the probability is 10 to the 112,000 power, right? If it's 10 to the 10, it's 10 times 10. If it's 10 to 100, it's 10 times 100. This man has calculated that the likelihood of a cell forming is so great, I mean, it's so distant, it's 10 to the 112,000 power, which means it's impossible. There's just no likelihood that it could ever occur. And then he gives a practical example, if, you know, the math is too much. And he says, if you take like a proton from within your own body and you mark it, now there's about 3 trillion protons or something, or 3 trillion cells in a human body, they estimate. So if you take one and you mark it and then you throw it out into the universe, because one human body has 3 trillion, and then what to speak about, you know, all the other human bodies, and then the planet itself, and then all the other planets in our so-called cosmos, and there's something like 10 billion planets in the Milky Way, and there's something like so many trillions of Milky Ways in the entire universe. You know, the figures go on and on and on. So he said, now, if you take that one proton that you've marked, you throw it out into the universe and then try and find it amongst the whole universe, what are the chances that if you mix it all together or blow it all up, that you'll ever find that one proton again? And then he says, but to get this cell formation, according to the probability, you would have to not only find that one proton, not just once in the whole throughout the whole universe, if you could travel through the universe, but you would have to find it 3,460 something times on the trot. Right? That's the level of probability for the formation of a single cell. And that's not even a living cell. That's just a dead one. That's just having the components there. And how that comes alive, who can say? They haven't even got close to that yet. So, therefore, life is very mysterious. It's actually inconceivable. And the scientists admit it. When you're talking about figures like that, it's inconceivable how a living cell could have come about. So we also say life is inconceivable. We say God is inconceivable, the original life form on which all the other life forms are based, from which all the other life forms are generated. So we're saying the same thing. The scientists are still saying the same thing, but they're just denying the personality of Godhead. Why? Because they're puffed up, stubborn. They don't want to admit that there's a personality who is bigger and more important and more intelligent and more powerful than them. Rather, no, everything has to evolve. And funnily enough, we scientists are the most evolved out of all the life forms in the universe. Because we're talking all this garbage, right? That makes us very intelligent, and we are therefore going to save this planet. And that's what you have. These are the masters of this particular planet, the scientists. Anybody who is a scientist, if they walk into the room and somebody declares, oh, here's a scientist, and me, oh, you know, touch his lotus feet, do some puja. Everybody immediately listens. Oh, whatever he has to say, it's like nectar to the ears. And he's talking all garbage, all mumbo jumbo. And if you really get into the claims that the scientists make, because not every scientist, but especially these, you know, people that promote the idea of chemical evolution, biological evolution, you know, this evolution, that evolution, you really get into their arguments, it's just belief. It's just their own ideas, their own concoctions, their own beliefs. And they simply imagine so many different scenarios how that life could have originally come about. But when it gets down to it, you pin them down and ask them, you tell us, because life is everywhere. I mean, quite apart from how many cells there are, if you just take, you know, how many bigger manifestations of life there are on this planet, how many human beings, how many, you know, insects, how much vegetation, how many fish. I mean, life is everywhere. Bacteria, it's in the atmosphere, it's in your guts. There's just so much life everywhere. My dear scientists, please tell us, take one example of the trillions and billions and, you know, gazillions of occurrences of life that we can perceive on this one planet, and just tell us, give us one example of how it's come about. Just explain it. Oh, well, I'm sorry, we don't know that. But it can't be God. This is Richard Dawkins. I mentioned this before. This man is a big atheist. He's propagating atheism, you know, the God delusion. And, of course, he's promoting science in his place. So he was challenged. After him, you know, declaring that there's no such thing as God, he was challenged. Okay, can you tell us what life is or where it comes from? Well, we don't know that right now. So he's so convinced that there's no God, but he can't say what there is. He can't say what life actually is. So what do you conclude about such a person? They're just very puffed up. Envious. That's all. They're seeing everything with a jaundiced eye. They see the screen of material nature. the elements, solids, liquids, fire, space, air, you know, this is the stuff of the universe. They see that, or at least they think they see that. But they're dazzled by it. They can't see beyond it. What it is that's activating, you know, the stuff of the universe, what makes the protons and neutrons move, what makes the cells combine. That's all movement. There's something going on there. There's a force behind it. You get down into the smallest identifiable particle of existence, material stuff, you'll see it's moving. There's some movement, there's some activity. There is a display of energy. So what is that? Nobody can say. It doesn't matter how fine, how deeply you look into it, how microscopically you investigate the stuff of the universe, you'll keep on seeing layer after layer, just like, you know, they had the atoms, then they had the protons and the neutrons, you know, molecules, then atoms, and then protons and neutrons, and if you go further and further, you'll probably find something else. But it's all moving. So what is that force that makes it all move? That nobody can say. It's a big mystery. So yes, the material universe is very mysterious. And that's admitted here by the Lokapalas. They're all saying, Lokapala Uchu. These are the governors of various planets, not just this one tiny little dot of a planet. But they're saying, we only believe in our direct perception. They are having an audience with Lord Vishnu. They're so elevated souls, actually, that they're invited to this Jagya, Dukkha Jagya, and they're actually seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead right in front of their own eyes, and still they can't believe it. That is the mysterious nature of the Supreme Lord, that even when you see Him, you can't understand Him. His existence is entirely beyond our calculation. So they say, we only believe in our direct perception, but under the circumstances, now, we're not sure whether we're actually seeing you with our material senses or some other way. They're becoming bewildered because with their senses, they can only see, you know, these basic elements of the universe. Because they're seeing from a planetary perspective. We only see, you know, from the perspective of being trapped on this one tiny little Earth planet. We don't even see everything that's going on this planet. We don't see what's going on under the oceans. There's still vast tracts of jungle where nobody knows what's going on in there. We don't know what's really going on in the atmosphere. And what to speak about more subtle manifestations. We have no idea about the space that we're living in. But these personalities, they're in control of whole planets. So they have a perspective, you know, vast, unimaginable to our perspective. Yeah, with our little telescopes, we're trying to see into the universe. But these Lokapalas, they naturally see the construction of the universe, different planets. They can move from one planet to another at will. That is their ability. But still, they're saying, we're actually bewildered by seeing this form of you, O Lord, Lord Vishnu. We can't really figure out how we're seeing you, because this seems to be something beyond what we normally perceive. We generally think that we're seeing everything, all the different planets, etc. But where do you fit into that? How are you comprised? What is your makeup? What is your characteristic? We can't figure it out. You're a complete mystery, even though we're seeing you directly. Are we seeing you through our material senses or by some other way? That's a good question. It means that maybe we're only seeing you not by our power, but by your power. Because you want us to see you, therefore we can see you. But by our own direct perception and our own senses, we have no ability to perceive who you are. That's actually what they're saying. You're appearing before us because you want to, not because we have the ability to see you, but because you're presenting yourself in such a way that even with our dull, blunt, material senses, we can actually understand you exist. So that's a very important point. Such persons are unable to understand the transcendental, eternal form of the Lord. Nobody in the material universe can understand the eternal, transcendental form of the Lord. Not even Lord Brahma. We're only allowed to see what God wants us to see. And anything else is kept from us. We're dependent. We're not independent in any sense of the word. We're not independent. Our senses do not work independently. They work under the control of higher authorities. That's also explained in the Bhagavatam. Even if you want to blink your eye, it requires the permission or the assent of a particular demigod who's in charge of that function. Now we can't understand how they're in charge of all the blinking of the eyes of all the living beings. But they are, they have such power. And if that is withdrawn from a particular living entity, boom, then you're stuck. Yeah, you can't blink your eye even, what to speak about other functions. If the ability to move your arm is withdrawn, there's nothing you can do. You can try all your medical sciences, but if the demigod that's in charge of that function withdraws permission, you can't move anymore. You become paralyzed. And it goes on and on and on. So every single function that we have, what we experience with our senses, is controlled by a higher authority. And then what to speak about, you know, beyond the material realm. So even these demigods that are in charge of these functions that control, you know, the lives of uncounted trillions of other living beings, even they are bewildered when it comes to understanding the form of the Lord. That's the message. So, what is the way to see him? Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena. Prabhupada quotes that, that you have to have this submissive and honest view. You have to accept that you're subordinate. You have to accept that the Supreme Lord is fully in control and that you're his servant. And if we have that mentality, not being puffed up, not relying on our own ability, but fully surrendering all our senses, fully surrendering our minds, fully surrendering our intelligence to the Supreme Lord and allowing him to take charge of them, that's surrender. He takes full control directly of his pure devotees. Then you can see him if he wants to show himself. Not even the residents of Vrindavan can guarantee that they'll see Krishna at every moment. In fact, generally speaking, their lamentation is they don't see him often enough. Krishna comes and goes as he pleases. That's his position. So that mysterious nature, inconceivable nature of the Supreme, everybody has to accept that. Material scientists have to accept it. Spiritual scientists have to accept it. You can't get away from these principles of eternality, inconceivability, unlimitedness. The more you look into material nature, the more you'll find that these three principles always exist and are the underlying factors behind any material manifestation. That everything is eternal, everything is unlimited, and everything is inconceivable. If we're not puffed up, we'll accept that. If we are puffed up, we won't be able to see that and accept it even when it's presented right in front of our faces. So these Lokapalas are speaking then on behalf of ordinary materialistic persons, because they themselves are devotees of the Lord, so they do see Lord Vishnu. But they're speaking as Arjuna was speaking, on behalf of ordinary conditioned souls. And they're making these statements for our benefit, that we're Lokapalas, we're in charge of old planetary systems, but even we can't understand God. So you tiny human beings, don't, you know, become puffed up and think that you can figure out what life is and how this universe works and what the cause of everything is. You can't. You submissively hear, that's all. Don't try to understand things by your own direct perception and your own intellectual and mental abilities. You're conditioned. You'll only see what you're being allowed to see, that's all. Even Stephen Hawking, in his book, The Brief History of Time, in the beginning section, he actually mentions that of course it's always perfectly conceivable that material nature could be acting in such a way as to prevent us from ever knowing what it is. He gives a kind of concession that that's a possibility, but then he immediately dismisses that and goes rambling on in the rest of his book about how he's going to develop a theory which will prove, or which will eliminate the need for God. Because the Big Bang Theory, you can still say that God caused it, supplied the ingredients, etc., etc. So let's make a theory which will eliminate the need or the possibility for God anywhere in the picture. That's what he's aiming for. And yet he's already admitted that material nature, the laws of nature, could be working on us in such a way as to prevent us from ever understanding what the universe is, what the laws are, and what's behind them. So they're all cheaters. Therefore, Prabhupada had no hesitation in saying these men are all cheaters, word jugglers, liars. Sometimes they deliberately lie. Just like in the school, the big debate about intelligent design in America. You're not allowed to say anything about God or anything suggesting God in the school curriculum. You can teach evolutionary theory as a fact, even though the things that they teach there, many of them have been exposed since the textbooks were printed. Many of the examples that they use to prove evolution have been proved to be bogus. They don't work. There's so many different examples, you know, Piltdown Man, Nebraska Man, this man, that man, all these so-called missing links, which have all proved to be completely bogus, but they're still in the school textbooks, and they're still being taught as fact. That's cheating. The teachers themselves know it's cheating. They know that what they're teaching is a lie, but they keep on doing it. Why? Because they have faith in evolution, even though they can't prove it. They're just cheating people. So at some point or another, and that time may be coming, now you have this intelligent design movement they're trying to challenge. At some point or another, this cheating will become so obvious to everybody that they won't be able to sustain it any longer. And then things will move around. So that was one of Prabhupada's main points of preaching, as he's saying here. Those who are not materially puffed up can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So stop the cheating. Every single day that I was with Prabhupada in about 18 months, I don't think there was ever one day when he didn't mention and condemn the cheating of the material scientists. It was his favorite topic, because that's the challenge to the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam's view is very clear. It's scientific. It's perfectly based on real knowledge. It's not fairy tales. The real fairy tale is the evolutionary idea that somehow or another just sheer mechanisms come together and work without the influence of a superior, conscious, living being. It's just cheating. So Prabhupada wanted to present the Bhagavatam as the science, real science. And this other stuff is not science. It's bogus. Okay, so then whoever's doing tomorrow's class, you're on text 38. So we'll finish at that point. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Janaka Raj Prabhu.
Just a comment, really. I saw an interview on a documentary called Expelled, which I think you actually gave me. And Stephen Dawkin, he was being confronted by an intellectual from the Jewish...
Richard Dawkins. Not Stephen Hawking. Dawkins.
The guy who propounds this the God delusion.
Yes.
So because of the advances in intelligent design, more or less nobody can accept any longer that it all happened by chance. Even him. And they were confronting him. So they said to him, so if intelligent design is such an obvious principle and you don't believe in God, then what do you think happened? And he said in this interview that maybe some aliens came and, seeded the earth. So he was expecting, you know, he had faith in aliens, some kind of developed super aliens coming and seeding the earth. I mean, he didn't go like, where did the aliens come from? But it was just right. Shocking, you know, to see this so-called scientist saying, I don't believe in God, so where did everything... Oh, maybe some aliens did it.
Yes. That means that because the evolutionary theory is false and it's now becoming exposed as such, they're grasping for other explanations beyond, you know, what was being spoken of 50 years ago. Now you've got Richard Dawkins, Stephen Hawking. They're all talking now, just recently, Stephen Hawking. He's saying, seriously, we have to accept that there are other living beings on other planets. That there are alien life forms. And, you know, he was saying that we should not do anything to attract their attention. Just like, you know, they've had this thing going for about 50 years, sending radio signals into outer space, trying to communicate, you know, with other alien life forms. If they exist, then they'll hear our little radio waves and realize somebody's here and maybe we can communicate with them. I mean, it sounds like a total joke, a fairy tale, which the American government is spending literally billions of dollars on to promote this program. Now anyway, Stephen Hawkins, he's saying, yes, they could be aliens, but we shouldn't try to attract their attention and bring them here because they may turn out to be just like us. Yeah? Just as we have traveled from one country to another and raped the land, like in America, the whites went there, they drove off all the Indians, they butchered them and killed them and took all their land and raped it, basically. They may come from outer space and do the same thing to us. So let's keep quiet and not attract any attention. This is the world's leading theoretical physicist talking. These people are all crackers. They're all a bunch of nutters. But in another sense, their madness reflects reality. Because what we do have in the Bhagavatam are alien life forms. We have a fully populated universe. We have Lokapalas, people who actually are in charge of whole planetary systems. It's all there in the Bhagavatam. So they are coming closer to the Bhagavatam's statements in many respects. That's the way science is going, because it has to, because this is real. And all the other things that they're saying are not real, so they'll be exposed. Anything that is a lie will not stand up. Under scrutiny, it cannot stand up. A lie is always going to be exposed at one point or another. So you can't, when you come to the Bhagavatam, you can't go beyond what the knowledge that's in the Bhagavatam. Because it's the actual explanation of reality. And when you arrive at that, then you understand, yes, this is it. This explains everything. There are no gaps. Everything is there. In modern science, there's so many gaps. There's so many speculations. So many missing everything. There's not just missing links. There's missing everything. Because it's not true. What they're saying about life coming from matter is simply not true. That's it. So therefore you have even the big atheists now, you know, making statements which are very, very similar to what we find in the Bhagavatam. because their other explanations were not adequate and they'd been exposed. They have to look beyond that, and then the more you look beyond it, then the more refined your understanding has to become in order to explain something. So you have to start moving into subtle realms. And that's what we have in the Bhagavatam. There are many different levels of existence. Not just gross physical, but there's many subtle levels. And ultimately, there's the spiritual level. Okay, so we'll finish there. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.